Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the main event. Let's get ready to rumble!
WrestlingClassics.com, the best in professional wrestling on the internet, presents Ringside Live with your host, Mark Nolte.
Y'all ready for this?
Hi, everybody. I'm Mark Nolte, and welcome to a very special edition of Ringside Live right here on WrestlingClassics.com. And today I am joined by a very special mystery guest co-host. Mystery guest co-host, sign in, please.
How you doing, Mr. Nolte?
I don't recognize this voice.
You don't either.
Mystery cast co-host, are you a two-time NCAA All-American and former NCAA champion?
That's me.
Are you a two-time NWA heavyweight champion of the world?
Live and in color.
Did you and your brother win three World Tag Team Championships?
Is that all? I thought it was more than that.
I count three. Are you one of the few people on this planet that wins sports bets against me?
That's me again.
Why, it's Jack Briscoe. Welcome to Ringside Live, mystery co-host.
Well, thank you very much, Mark. It's a pleasure to be here.
We do have some exciting announcements. The WrestlingClassics.com in-demand pay-per-view, Red, White, and Blue, featuring the best of the NWA World Heavyweight Championship, is playing at throughout July. Six NWA World Heavyweight Championship matches. Six nights where history is made. And, Jack, I know that you're particularly excited about your title of defense against Giant Baba from Japan.
Yes, I am. That was a very great night for myself and Mr. Baba.
A better night for Mr. Baba.
Much better night for Mr. Baba. But after all these years, I had never seen that tape until you and I put the commentary down on it. And just watching that and commenting on my thoughts and everything came back to me from that night, and I got cold chills all over again.
Not only do you get to see this historic match, but we also get your commentary and where we get your insights.
You enjoyed it, and I always loved going to Japan. I've been there many, many times, and Japan's one of my favorite places in the world, and it was always a pleasure to go there, and it was especially exciting that time because I lost the world's title match and won it back. I had a contract signed with him, a return clause, just in case I lost. And I was fortunate enough to meet him again the following week and win the title back.
Now, Jack, your biography, which is appropriately titled Briscoe, continues to do well, and right now it's on sale. Order your copy of Briscoe today and save $5. Jack, I know you appreciate all the fans that have read your book as well as the reviews and the feedback you've received.
Well, it was a lot of fun putting that book together. My good friend Bill Murdoch and I collaborated on the book and got to bring back some really great memories and some great times. And it was especially fun getting the fans to be able to read the book and give me the feedback on WrestlingClassics.com, Amazon.com, and the feedbacks were really good and really made me feel good. All the fans really enjoyed reading the book, and I sure appreciate it.
You, Bill, and Mike Chapman, of course, were in St. Louis for the NCAA championships in March.
It was the first time I'd been to amateur matches since I'd graduated from college in '65, and I was a little apprehensive about being around amateur fans because, like I said, I hadn't been around them. And I was just thrilled at the reception I got, and we sold a bunch of books, and I signed a bunch of books. And I saw a bunch of teammates of mine I hadn't seen since we left college, and it sure was good to see them.
And I know we also had a great time. Of course, we always have a great time every time we go out to Las Vegas for the Cauliflower Alley Club convention.
Yes, and we got a book signing out there, a very successful one, and got to meet a lot of fans that I've talked to by the internet, by WrestlingClassics.com. And also seen some old fans from back on my wrestling days. I recognized them when I saw them, and it sure was great to see them and talk to them. And being able to talk to the fans like that and then hearing their favorite memories of different matches and different areas of the country sure brought back some great memories, and it was a lot of fun just listening to them and their favorite memories.
Now, Jack, this is a big summer for you. So right now, if you go to WrestlingClassics.com's homepage, you can click the pay-per-view link and get information about Red, White, and Blue, the pay-per-view this summer. And you can also get your copy of Briscoe for $5 off.
Sound like a great deal.
Also want to welcome a new member of the WrestlingClassics.com family, Jimmy Garth.
Well, I'm sure glad to have Jimmy on board. Jimmy and I have been friends for many, many years, and he's always been one of my favorite people. And Jimmy's a great wrestler, a great person, and a great father, a great husband. And it's just a real thrill to have Jimmy as a part of Wrestling Classics. It's always nice to see somebody that likes to buy you lunch. And Jimmy bought me a lot of lunches over bets we've made in the past. And it's always good to see somebody when they want to buy you lunch.
The way you explained it to me after the TV tapings, that night a lot of times you guys were booked in Miami.
Yeah, we were booked in Miami, and we would catch a chartered plane from Tampa to Miami and back. And we would play different games, and like choose numbers or draw straws or something like that, and the loser had to buy everybody else lunch. And always had the game rigged for Jimmy. I had to buy us lunch all the time. Doesn't know that, though.
He will now. Well, mystery guest co-host, let's bring in our very special guest today. As a singles wrestler, he was one of the most decorated international stars of all time. Georgia champion, Mid-American champion, 8-time Central States champion, Southern champion beating Dusty Rhodes, North American champion, New Japan United National champion. When the Missouri State Championship was regarded as the top regional title in wrestling, he held it a record 7 times, including retiring the belt. Former United States champion, World Wrestling Association champion, World Wrestling Council champion, Japanese Pacific Wrestling Federation champion, and a record 8-time National Wrestling Alliance World Heavyweight champion. Any wrestler that ever faced him, you could probably hear the same one-word description, tough. He is one of the most respected competitors in the history of the sport, and now he's developing a reputation as one of the finest trainers in the sport. Harley Race, welcome to WrestlingClassics.com and Ringside Live.
Thank you, my friend. I didn't know how in the hell you come up with all those. I've been searching that thing myself, and I didn't find half those.
Well, I'm blowed up just listening to them.
Mystery guest co-host, say hello to Harley Race.
Hey, Harley Race. How you doing, my man?
Fine, my friend.
Remember all those times I kicked your butt all over the world? I don't know how you won all those titles.
Me either. Me either, my friend. The guy on the line with us, are we allowed to say who it is yet?
Yes, we have identified him, yes. Well, we were trying to figure out if you'd recognize the voice.
Well, probably one of the toughest people that you'll meet today or back then, he damn sure was. Jack Briscoe, my friend, how have you been?
I've been good, Harley, man. I heard about your back surgery. I hope everything was very successful for you.
Yeah, it went fine. It went fine, Jack.
Well, that's great, because I know that you needed it real bad. Last time I saw you, was barely getting around. So you getting around good now?
Well, I'm getting around a heck of a lot better than what I was.
Well, that's great. I'm glad to hear that, Harley.
Harley, there's a lot of talk about a training camp that you're going to be running in August with Tom Pritchard and Les Thatcher.
Yes, we have one here. We had one last year with Thatcher, myself, and Ricky Steamboat. And this year we're bringing in the Japanese group called NOAH out of Japan. And Tom Pritchard is going to be down for 3 days for it. Also, Les Thatcher will be back with me. And overall, I think it's probably the greatest opportunity for a young man that has not had a lot of exposure in the wrestling business. It's the two biggest organizations still going today, WWE being the biggest worldwide, and NOAH being a very, very close second throughout the Asian part of the world.
Well, that's great, Harley. I hear there's going to be a great prize for the top two boys.
Now, the top two boys are going to get all expenses paid trips to Tokyo. They'll work on the cards while they're in Tokyo, plus work in their dojo. And as you know, Jack, once you've been there and they see you, like you, you've opened the door there that's open for the rest of your career.
Yes, I really love Japan. I've been there many a time. So, is there any age limit on this camp, Harley? I might be interested in joining.
Well, my friend, the last time I saw you, you could very well have done it. So come on up.
Thanks, Arlie.
Well, it's interesting to talk to you guys about training camps and breaking in, because Harley, you're running one of the most respected schools in the world. Jack, you know people like Steve Kern that are training, and you also know people that are being trained. What are the differences between training today and training when the two of you broke in?
Well, I think there's a lot more emphasis on the flying moves, on the stuff like that that Kern teaches. You know, there's a lot more movement in the ring nowadays, a lot more jumping off the top rope, which Harley was a master of. He had that big headbutt off of the top that was devastating. And I think that they get you in better shape these days. I know Harley's camp, for instance, he teaches all the technical stuff of the mat wrestling and the maneuvers, the takedowns, and also the famous move that he made of the headbutt off the top rope.
One I wish I'd left half of my repertoire, Jack. That's half of my back problems now.
Yeah, I figured that was a part of the back problems you had. That was a beautiful move, and I've had it done to me several times. I don't wish that on anybody.
Well, you know as well as I do, Jack, if you teach these kids how to mat wrestle, you're extending their careers by decades.
That is true, Harley, and that's what I always tried to do when I was in the ring with you, because I knew if I couldn't get into a fist fight with you, you'd kill me, or those maneuvers off the top rope. I always tried to keep it to a mat wrestling, and like you said, I think it adds years onto your career.
With the advent of the cruiserweights, Harley, has it opened the door for more individuals to get into wrestling?
It has opened the door that really, I think, shouldn't have been opened. There has to be a factory somewhere in central part of America that spits out 135, 140-pound kids with tattoos on every part of their body and all wearing black. And their chances of going the whole lot further than where they're going right there, the opportunity to go further than that is virtually impossible. As Jack can tell you as well, if you learn how to wrestle, you've got some size to you, you work out, you not only in the gym but on the cardio aspect of it, then you've got a chance to advance. And with all the territory parts of wrestling as Jack and I knew it closed down, it's become much more difficult to be able to break into this business and make a living at it full time.
Yes, that's true. Since the territories went away, it's the guys used to be a lot more guys, of course, and guys could move from territory to territory. But like Harley said, those smaller guys that just don't have a chance, they're never going any further than graduating from their class. And unfortunately, there's a lot of schools out there and a lot of camps out there that just take advantage of the kids and actually just take their money and really don't teach them really how to work or how to do anything, knowing that there's no future for them, versus the camps like Harley's, where there's definitely a chance that you'll get to work and you'll be able to earn a living, like you said. And you've got that connection in Japan, and Harley has these shows around Missouri there, and there's a chance for those kids. But unfortunately, there's people out there that's taking the kids' money and not getting anything in return.
That's very true, Jack. And right here in the state of Missouri and in your home state of Oklahoma now, there's probably 10 different groups trying to run, and the people that are running them are maybe one step above a scam artist.
Harley, remind everybody what the dates are of the camp, and I know you've got a great website, harleyrace.com. Can people get registration forms at your website?
Yes, they can. I think it's even updated now with Pritchard's name and everybody that is going to be here. It starts at 9 o'clock in the morning on the 9th of August and runs through an event after the training on the 13th right here in Eldon, and it'll be 5 days of primarily short matches with just different people after different people, that we can actually see what these kids do know, and hopefully we can help them go above where they're at. And then the ending of it will be a card made up of the better ones that will be here for that camp.
Do you have a phone number, Harley, they can call?
I sure do. It's area code 573-392-4100. Now, they have to take into account, Jack, that I'm leaving tomorrow night out of St. Louis, and I won't be back till the 14th. So the way to probably handle it the best would be online. The applications are there online. They can fill those out and send them to me, and the second I get back, they will all be answered.
Harley, they didn't have online applications or really even training schools when you broke in. Your school was the School of Hard Knocks, wasn't it?
Well, I started virtually the same place. I say I started. I went there. Same place John Valentine did, the Sabisco Brothers in central Missouri, a little town called Savannah, Missouri. And after about a year of getting hurt every other day and planting and harvesting their crop, I finally went on down to Gus Karras, and I got started through Gus Karras.
Now, you also started taking on all comers in the carnivals, too, didn't you?
Yeah, that was for one summer.
Well, I wondered why you were so tough. You went to the same school as Johnny Valentine, huh?
Well, poor John had it worse than me, Jack. They shipped his butt out to South America. They got a brother, or did have a brother. I'm sure he's got to be dead by now. That owned a big, huge ranch in South America. And Valentine got sent down there for 6 months.
Oh, my goodness. No wonder he was angry all the time.
So the Zabisco brothers trained you before Gus Karras broke you in?
Yes.
I don't think people today can comprehend how brutal that could be.
We got drug around quite a bit.
Well, as you can tell, Mark, there's only two people survived it, the Johnny Valentine and Harley Race. Now, that ought to answer your question.
Boy, it sure does. Harley, speaking of tough, there's a story going around that you were defending the NWA Championship on a card in the Pacific Northwest for Don Owens, and you were challenged by the leader of a bike gang to a fight, and you accepted.
Well, that's kind of the way the story went. You remember Big Josh, Jack?
Yes.
Big Josh was there. There were three of them, and Josh could wrestle a little bit. So Josh got in the ring, and he took this guy down and didn't do anything to him, nor could the guy get up. Finally, the guy, Josh led him up, and I said, "Come on, Josh, just hurt this guy and let's get this crap over with." And the guy said, "I didn't come here to wrestle him, I come here to wrestle you."
Oh, man.
I said, "Well, wrestling me is going to be a little bit different." So, as you know, if you go to hook up with somebody, there's just a natural reaction. Their arms are going to come up because they've seen it in television forever. When his arms came up, my head came straight forward, blew his nose apart, then I just cross-faced him until he passed out.
Oh, my God. I remember you doing that to me.
And as you know, if you got to go to the bathroom one way or the other, when you make that little trip passing out, you're going to relieve yourself.
Isn't that what's happened to him?
Yep. And Elton Owens, Don's brother, come roaring out there then, "You're going to get us all sued, my God." So we just chucked a big thing of water and dumped on him, and he rolled right on out of the ring and went right out of the building.
Pretty much everybody who ever wrestled you, Jack Briscoe included, says you were one of the toughest guys, if not the toughest guy they ever faced. Who were the legit toughest guy that you ever faced, Harley?
Right next to you.
Harley always had that steel plate in his head, man. You couldn't hurt him if it was a baseball bat.
So you had Jack. Anybody else high up on that list?
There were a lot of guys back during that era that knew how to wrestle and could get in there, and majority of them could wrestle anybody and have a great match with it. They could also protect themselves if somebody wanted to jack with.
Of course, the history of Harley Race and Jack Briscoe will be forever intertwined. I know there's a lot of mutual respect between the two of you. Harley, Jack was very complimentary of you for coming to Houston and defending the world championship against him. Had you two wrestled each other prior to the famous match in Houston?
Yes, we wrestled many times in St. Louis and in Florida. And Harley always was the toughest guy I ever got in the ring with. And like I've always had the great amount of respect for Harley for coming to Houston and putting up the world championship belt. Not like the other guy that used to call himself champion that was afraid to show up in Houston to take me on.
Well, in the belt going from myself to Jack, at that point in time, it could not have went to a classier, good-looking young talent that the business really needed. They had the Luthezes. They had the, well, going back through the list, the O'Connors, so on and so forth. They needed a great young man that could get out there and wrestle anybody, represent the belt with class, and Jack Briscoe fit that bill right to a T.
Well, thanks very much, Harley. I appreciate those kind words.
Houston was kind of a special city for you, Harley. Other people that have body slammed Andre the Giant, in fact, there's a picture cover from a magazine posted on the WrestlingClassics.com website with you picking up Andre, completely turning him and body slamming him. But Houston is the only place that Andre the Giant was ever suplexed.
I was lucky enough to be able to suplex him and slam him too. Hogan slammed him in WrestleMania 3, and he got him about chest high and just flipped him over. That was it. But I was grateful enough to, or lucky enough, I should say, to get a picture of myself having him up there. And you got to remember, once you get him up there and stop, then you got to make that turn with him. And that's probably another thing that added on to the back problems that are here now.
About that, I don't know how you ever did that, Harley. I've seen that picture, and that's one beautiful picture. I hope you have that in your collection, because that's an awesome picture. And I remember one time being in Houston with Andre. We had a two-ring battle royal, and they had to throw you from one ring to the other, and then out of that ring, well, you got eliminated. And as soon as the bell rang, there was about 30 of us, Andre come running right straight for me and picked me up in the middle of one ring and body slammed me clear over the other side of the other ring in one quick move. So he didn't have any trouble body slamming anybody.
Speaking of Houston, Harley, you were world champion for the better part of 6 years, and you had a reputation for being one of the most reliable champions in wrestling. If Harley Race said he was going to be there, he was going to be there. Houston, Paul Bosch claimed that you no-showed a title defense on two occasions, and that was really his reasoning for dropping out of the NWA in the early 80s. What happened those times?
The first one, I was in Hayes, Kansas, watching my son wrestle for state in high school wrestling. I had a single-engine airplane that I was flying from there down to Houston. I had chartered. And that time of year, in the middle of Kansas, or Oklahoma, you get tornadoes that are absolutely unreal. Or not just tornadoes, just horribly bad weather. The pilot would not take off. So I called. And, of course, that didn't work either. I had to definitely be lying. Secondly, I was wrestling for Jim Crockett in North Carolina. I was scheduled to wrestle, I think it was Wahoo. I'm not for sure on that. Nobody had bothered to tell me that the show started in the middle of the afternoon. I came walking into the arena in Houston at a little after 6, and everybody was walking out of the building as I came walking in. So I can understand Paul being upset, because coincidences like that don't happen all that often. But that is the God's honest true story on both of them.
Harley, during your first reign, you got to do something that Jack never did and always wanted to. Talk about your hour draw with Bruno Sammartino in St. Louis.
Bruno wasn't used to hour draws either. He had been in Japan with me just before that trip up there. I talked him into coming in to St. Louis. So Bruno was always in great, great shape. But he wasn't in shape win-wise to go an hour. At the end of the hour, he was made it back up to the dressing room, and I damn sure didn't want it. But I did it as a furtherance to the rib. I lit a cigarette up and come walking into the dressing room where Bruno was at. Bruno just broke out. He said, "You got to be absolutely out of your goddamn mind. You're some kind of freak of nature."
Oh, that's amazing, Arlie. That's a hell of a story.
Jack, you actually had a match with Bruno's that you thought you had signed, didn't you?
Yeah, we were kind of tentatively had a match scheduled for the Omni back when the Omni first opened up. And we was to do the same thing. We was to do an hour Broadway. But a couple of weeks before it was to take place, Vince McMahon Sr. Just didn't want his star down south going an hour Broadway with anyone, really. So he canceled out. I was very disappointed. I was really looking forward to it. I always admired Bruno.
Harley, when we announced your appearance, a lot of the fans got real excited. We've got a lot of questions. Ric Flair recently commented on an interview with Dave Meltzer that Harley was offered $25,000 by the WWF to no-show Starrcade 83. Is that true, and can he elaborate?
No, I was offered $250,000 to no-show it. The 25 grand comes in as part of the pay that I got out of Starrcade. But I was slow enough to talk to Vince the night before Starrcade, and somebody got wind that I had been flowing up there to talk to him, and I know they were very, very nervous about me showing up. But as I told Vince that night, we were in the bathroom and there was a full-length mirror there. I said, "Vince, what do you see?" He said, "Well, I see you and I in that stupid mirror." I said, "Yeah, and tomorrow I'm going to have to look at myself in that mirror again."
Well, you had to be tempting when you talk about $250,000, but you never really seriously considered it, did you?
When I went up there, I can't say I wasn't considering it, especially at that point in time when you know who Alliance was. Jim Crockett was virtually taking the Alliance. People that work for Crockett, if they come out to my area, say like Kansas City, he wanted commissions off of what they made out there, paid to him, similar to what Mushnick did in the early part of the National Wrestling Alliance.
Right, that 3% on the gate.
Yes. You couldn't get the people that you needed to stay going. Crockett had to have the group that he had, and he was trying to get more, and Vince was buying everybody that he could buy. So I virtually knew that the NWA was not going to be around a whole hell of a lot longer, but it had been the place that had done everything for me, and I just didn't feel that I could double-cross it and live with myself.
Jack, that's similar to the thoughts that you were having about the direction of professional wrestling.
Well, it certainly is. That's why the very reason why Jerry and I sold Georgia Championship Wrestling to Vince, because we say it was all falling apart, and we knew what direction it was going in, and we knew it was a matter of time before the NWA was finished. And like Harley said, Crockett was trying to take everybody and get a cut off of them, so the other territories didn't have a chance. And we knew it, and we decided we'd sell Georgia Championship Wrestling, and while we still had something to sell.
Harley, congratulations on getting inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame and the ceremony at WrestleMania this year.
Yeah, congratulations, Harley.
Thank you, Jack, and thank you, but I went into one just shortly thereafter, not downplaying that one at all, because it was a big honor. And there was a lot of guys I hadn't seen in a long time there, like Morocco and Billy Graham and so on and so forth. But there's one in Schenectady, New York.
George the Animal Steel's run. Is that his?
Yeah, well, it's not his.
Or not his, but he's associated with it.
Yes. It's actually run by the state there. And, Jack, if you're interested, I would feel very honored if you'd say yeah, and I can work with those people and get you into that.
Sounds great, Harley. I would like that.
They gave me a ring that is almost identical twin of a Super Bowl ring.
Oh, beautiful.
And it's got their initials across the front of it. It's Pro Wrestling Hall and Museum. And they have a very nice museum there, too. I donated some stuff to it, and I need to get... give them a pair of boots also that I need to get sent up there to them. Glad we were talking about it now. It reminded me of it again. But it's a real class act.
Yeah, I heard it was really nice, and they really treated the guys great and had a nice luncheon and a buffet or luncheon deal.
We had dinner, and they took everybody out of the room except the wrestlers themselves. You got to sit there and talk to people you hadn't seen forever. Didn't have to answer any questions or do anything at all during the dinner that you had. It was comfortable. It was nice.
Excellent. Well, that is something to look forward to. Ric Flair told the story on the DVD that the WWE Hall of Fame made about the NWA president Bob Geigel sending you to Japan with Flair as a policeman because Bob was worried about a possible title defense double cross by Jumbo Tsuruta.
It wasn't Bob that was worried about it. It was Flair and Crockett that was worried about it.
Baba and Tsuruta both were such great professionals. Why would they be concerned about that?
I have no earthly idea. And when we got there, it was brought up. I told Flair, I said, you've got absolutely nothing to worry about because you're working with one of the... Jack, you've worked with him half a dozen times.
Oh, I thought Jumbo Tsuruta, I thought he was one of the greatest in the world. He was a great guy, and a great worker, and a great wrestler, but on top of everything, he was a class guy.
Yep. Yes, he was. And the guy that was the boss of the organization was one of my very, very good friends. I went over there for Baba when he first opened his organization. And I went back for him 60-plus times until he passed away.
Dwayne Soper of Edmonton wants to ask both Jack and Harley, what is your favorite memory of wrestling for Stu Hart in Calgary Stampede Wrestling territory?
Well, my favorite memory was used to have the Calgary Parade, and Stu had a spot in the parade where he would pull the ring behind him with all the boys in their boots and tights back there. And he had this little riding lawnmower that he pulled the ring with. And about halfway through the parade, I was right in front of him in a Cadillac convertible with Stu. And the old riding lawnmower broke down right in the middle of the parade. And they couldn't get the ring out of the middle of the parade. He held up the whole parade.
That's notorious. He was notorious for that. That's why it long toward the end. They put him right at the tail end of the parade. They said, if it breaks down, everybody else is going to be by you.
What about you, Harley? Any special memories of wrestling for Stu Hart?
It would have been something similar to what Jack just said. Every time you went up there, you knew something, whether it would be Calgary, Edmonton, or one of those other places. Because we always went up there during their stampede. And I forget what the other one in Edmonton was called. Stu Hart came out to the ring to get to break something up that he didn't think was going the way it should. As he tried to get in the rings, his whole crotch split out of his pants. And Stu never ever wear undershorts, so you can imagine what was showing as it happened.
I bet that got a rise out of the crowd.
Kieran Shea has a couple of questions. First, Harley, how did you get your start working in Nashville as Jackie Long?
I had left here driving Happy Humphrey. Humphrey was a big, huge guy from Macon, Georgia. At one point in time, he was the heaviest man in the world at just shy of 1,100 pounds. He had my body weight or a little more cut off of him, and he got broke into the wrestling business. Well, I drove Humphrey until I got to Nashville the first time. The following week, we were in Mobile. Then Humphrey was going on from there, and I had the opportunity to go back to Nashville and start out on my own as Jack Long. So I made arrangements from a friend of mine in this area up here to come and take Humphrey from there, and I stayed there as one of the Long brothers.
How did you like working in Nashville? What kind of an experience was that for you?
Everybody should experience Nashville.
Jack's chuckle means he did too.
Should be a requirement.
Yes, that was one of my requirements about 6 months into the business. I went there and my first payoff was $12.50. Nick was a big spender.
Garen Shea's other question was, what was going through your mind when you wrestled George Gulas for the NWA World Heavyweight Championship?
Oh, right at that particular point in time, it was just, you hope the kid wouldn't pass out on you, and you can do a lot of stuff with damn near to anybody as long as they're capable of getting up and hanging on, and it was just something that he wanted done. Now, I'm going to tell you the funny part on the end. George actually believed along the middle or right at the end of the thing that he was had become a fairly tough guy. He rolled out of the ring, and there's three guys that used to heckle him all the time. He rolled right out of the ring and just slapped the hell out of one of them. Well, then all heck broke loose, and when he got back to the dressing room, Nick was back there. And you'll appreciate this, Jack. He walked over and he shook hands with me, and in his hand was three $100 bills. He said, "You made my boy." So, about 3 weeks later, when I got my check, it was minus a $300
profit. Oh, Nick always stayed true blue, man. That is a great story.
Jack, did you ever have to wrestle the dynamo known as George Gulas?
Fortunately, no.
Yeah.
I did have to wrestle a guy named Mike Graham, though.
Between the two of you, I'm counting 10 World Heavyweight Championship reigns, and collectively you held the belt for 8 years. I'm figuring probably 2,500 title defenses between the two of you. Does that sound close to the neighborhood?
Sounds good to me.
It was seven nights a week for God only knows how long, and the same thing for Jack.
Most nights you got to wrestle the top wrestlers in the world, whether it was Mr. Wrestling Number 2 or Wahoo McDaniel or Johnny Valentine. But then there were the nights. How often were you in the ring with somebody that you just kind of said to yourself, you've got to be kidding. What am I doing in the ring with this guy?
Well, it happened a lot more than you would think it would, because each territory had their own local heroes, and some of the territories, some of these guys never went to any other part of the country except to stay in their little hometowns, and it happened quite often in some of the smaller territories.
What about you, Harley?
I would have answered it just like that.
Okay. Names, though. Any names particularly stick out as guys that you just got in the ring with and thought to yourself, you've got to be kidding?
No, not really. I can't think of anyone in particular. Matter of fact, I tried to forget them as soon as possible.
We also have a question on the other end of the scale. There was a lot of great wrestlers that the fans nationally didn't get exposed to because they didn't travel that much. For instance, Jack always speaks very highly of Ken Lucas. Harley, did you ever get a chance to wrestle Ken, and what were your thoughts of him?
Yes, I wrestled Kenny several times. He was a great wrestler.
I always said if Kenny would have went out and gone to other territories, he would have been an international star, but you couldn't get him out of Alabama.
That's right. And another one who became bigger than Kenny, but he wouldn't go any place other than Texas, Oklahoma, and I think he did come out to Crockett for a while, is Dickie Murdoch.
Yeah.
I agree. Dickie was one of the greatest, and he came to Florida for a while, too, and Dickie and I had a great run here in Florida.
There was always something about Dickie that somewhere during the match, for whatever reason, I have not ever been able to figure it out, he had to become George Sanford for just a minute.
Yeah, that's true.
You won the world title 8 times, Harley, and I can think of at least 3 of those that absolutely shocked everybody. Talk about the first time you won the belt.
Well, in all sincerity, it should have went to the guy sitting right next to you. Dory Funk Sr. manipulated stuff around, and in all sincerity, by it going to me the first time, it made me on a national scale. I went on from there to be very blessed, and so did Jack. Don't you think, Jack?
Absolutely, no doubt about it. It was one of the great times of my life, and one that I always look back on it with very great memories, and you're a part of it, Harley.
Harley, you initially lost the title to Jack, and then challenged Jack several times while Jack was champion, and then Jack got an opportunity to challenge you when you were champion on several occasions. Do any particular match of the hundreds of matches that you had together stand out?
Well, a couple of them do for me. We had one in Japan, Harley and I did, and we wrestled to an hour draw there, and I forget what town it was. It was in the dead middle of the winter, and it was freezing inside the building, and those days they didn't heat the inside of those buildings. And at the end of the hour-long draw, I ran to our dressing room to get around the heater. I hadn't even broken a sweat. I was still freezing at the end of an hour. And another one that stands out in my mind was when we wrestled in St. Louis. And of course, Harley was a huge favorite in St. Louis, and had a huge stout crowd. And we went an hour Broadway, and always enjoyed wrestling Harley, because you go an hour with Harley and it seemed like 5 minutes. And that was one of my favorite memories in St. Louis.
What about you, Harley? Anything in particular stand out?
I would say it would be similar to what Jack just told you. We wrestled one another so many times in so many different cities that there isn't just one that jumps out and grabs me, but any time you're in a ring with a kid as talented as he is, you didn't have to worry about, is he going to be there, or is something going to get jacked up? You just knew that what you were doing was getting done and getting done right.
Both of you at different times in your career wrestled Bruiser Brody. I'd like to get both of your reactions on Brody.
Well, Brody was a big, strong, tough guy, and That's the way he made his living, was being a big, strong, tough guy. He never made any deals like that to say that he was a wrestler, because a wrestler he wasn't. He was just a big old tough guy, and I dreaded getting in the ring with him, because you knew he was going to get hurt. He was the king of the potatoes, and man, he could hurt you. You had to keep your eye on him all the time, because you didn't know what a knee was coming at you, a fist or a foot or what. But I had a few matches with him, but I never really enjoyed him.
Well, I'd have to say almost the same thing to that. With a bruiser wrestling a guy like Jack, he would be a lot more careful with him than he would be wrestling a nobody type person, because he really was a bully type guy. If he knew he could bully you around, you were in for a much rougher evening than if he knew that if he tried that crap with you, it was going to be returned.
From the 60s on, the two of you wrestled, or in Harley's case, managed or managed against almost every man to hold a major version of the world title. I'd like to get your scouting reports on some of these names. Lou Thesz.
One of the all-time greatest.
Amen.
Harley, in the 60s, you spent a lot of time in the AWA. Did you get a chance to wrestle Lou much?
I wrestled Lou three or four different times in tag matches with Larry Henning. I wrestled Lou once in a single.
You know, that's a great transition, because it's something that we haven't talked about yet. How long had you been wrestling when you formed your team with Larry Hennig in the AWA in the 60s?
Well, I came virtually starting in tag teams with John Long in the Tennessee area. So a tag team wasn't a big transition for me. I just didn't particularly like tag teams.
What was it about tag teams that you didn't particularly care for?
I don't know. I guess I'm nitpicking. You get things started one way, and you get your partner comes in, and he's got his own thoughts, and he switches it another way. And the guy you should be asking about the tag teams is sitting right there beside you. Him and his brother were probably one of the best there ever was.
Jack, what do you think?
Well, I agree with Harley. I never really did enjoy a tag team until later on in my career, because early in our career, Jerry was his singles and I was in singles. But towards the end of our career, we wanted to finish our career as a tag team, and really enjoyed them. And we were very fortunate enough to wrestle a lot of great teams, such as Murdoch and Adonis, and Steamboat and Young Blood, and Steamboat and Flair, and which was a lot of fun. But in my earlier years, I felt the same way Harley did. I didn't really enjoy a tag team because of the ebb and flow, the way it would go, and especially if you get a partner that you really didn't know. He could change things around. If you had things going real good and you tagged your partner, you know, things could go wrong real quick. And I always like to have things under my own control. And a lot of times it just wasn't there in the tag team.
Harley, you and Larry never got to see you guys as a team, of course, but a lot of people still say that you were one of the greatest teams ever.
Larry and I had good chemistry together. Larry was like the Rock of Gibraltar. You know, it didn't, you know, getting him off his feet and getting him to do a lot of things just was never, ever going to happen. And I was kind of the other way, and we just kind of made it a damn good team.
And you got to spend, what, 2 years wrestling Bruiser and Crusher every night?
Oh, more than that. I was up there for 4 years.
Oh, my. You and Larry were together on your first tour of Japan in 67, I believe.
No, Larry came over later on. I made my first trip to Japan. Was right about the time that Henning blew his knee out, and they had switched me from Larry to Chris Markoff as a partner.
Okay.
Oh, my God. Chris Markoff.
That's like the difference between daylight and dark, my
boy. Boy, no kidding.
Your thoughts on Gene Kaniski?
There's only two people that I ever met in the whole wrestling business that could hit you and kick you at exactly the same time and had no clue where either one of them were going to land. The other one was Larry Hamilton.
I was going to say the other one was a Missouri Mauler, wasn't it?
Yes, sir.
I remember one time in Miami Beach against the Missouri Mauler, he kicked me in the groin and punched me at the eye at the exact same time. I just dropped like a sack of potatoes, and I still to this day hadn't figured out how in the hell he did that.
Well, we're right on with him.
Yeah.
Well, so both of you had NWA title losses to Giant Baba. Your thoughts on Baba as a wrestler?
I thought Baba was excellent, especially for a guy his size. Usually a guy his size is just kind of a gimmick type guy, but Baba could actually move around this because he was an athlete before he got to become a professional wrestler. He was a baseball player. So he was a good athlete, and he had a lot of good moves, and I thought Baba was all right.
Well, amen to that, because as I told you earlier in the interview, if a person could ever have a real close friend that you could hardly communicate with, Baba was that to me. He's come to America, stayed at my home. I've been over there countless numbers of times. He knows that back then I loved to play golf. He always made sure that stuff happened.
And that's hard to do in Japan. That took some doing on his part.
Now, one day I insisted that I pay. He says, "You do not want to do that." I said, "No, I'm paying." It was $1,600 American dollars.
Oh my goodness.
Ever let me make that mistake again.
I hope that included the cart.
They had no carts.
Are you going to play golf on this trip over, Arlie?
No, huh?
No, I wouldn't either.
If he is, somebody else is picking up the greens fees. Dusty Rhodes.
Probably one of the most charismatic people that's ever been in the wrestling.
Yeah, Mr. Box Office. And Dusty was one of the greatest guys on the stick that you could get. He was a great interviewer and knew how to get himself over better than anybody I've ever seen.
And last one would be Ric Flair.
Same deal. Flair's a great on the stick, man, and Flair could get himself over without even trying. Flair was just a natural. He was just naturally born for this business and was a great champion and a great guy, and I think the world of him today.
Harley, once again, tell us about your training camp coming up.
Well, it kicks off August 9th, and it runs through the event on the 13th of August. We're about 30 students into a 60-student cap, and I truthfully believe that for anyone that's involved in wrestling that does not have a secured spot somewhere, this would be very beneficial for them to be here.
And you're also going to have Tom Pritchard there from the WWE that's going to be taking a look at talent. And Les Thatcher, who's another great trainer in his own right, is going to be working with you as well.
Yes, and Ngawa and Misawa, the two guys out of Japan that will be physically involved in the training, will also be here.
Oh, yeah, he was a great rope worker, and I'm sure he's going to be a great asset to you there at the camp.
And he is, not only is he good in the ring, he's a Bubba type individual.
Well, Harley, I want to wish you luck with that camp. It really sounds like a great camp, and I know two lucky young men are going to have a great time in Japan and a great experience, and I wish you all the best with your camp and good luck to your boys.
Thank you, Jack, and the same to you, my friend.
Thank you, sir.
Hopefully I will be able to see you at Cauliflower Alley this coming year.
I hope so, and I saw your tag team partner there this year, Larry Hennig. It sure was good to see Larry. I hadn't seen him in ages, and Larry looked great.
Yeah, he said I double-crossed him. I told him I was going to talk to him into coming out there, and then I went in to have the back surgery.
Well, we missed you, Harley.
I certainly missed you, Jack.
All right. Have a good time in Japan, man.
Thank you, my friend.
Well, Harley Race, for being our special guest on Ringside Live today, you're going to get an autographed copy of Briscoe. Harley, I also understand you've got a book coming up in the near future as well.
It'll come out, hopefully, we're shooting for the 1st of November.
Excellent. Well, for my special mystery guest co-host, Jack Briscoe, I'm Mark Nolte. Goodbye, everybody.